Now, and what happens between chapter 1 and chapter 2, there is a beginning of a statement that Elohim is making here. And I've got the old English here. Pardon me if it troubles you, but I just use it because I've known so much about the old English. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host thereof. And here's that word host. And what's the word for host in Hebrew? The Lord of hosts? Huh? It's army, but that's English. Zavot. Zavot. And here, when we look at that word, that word does not really mean armies of and by itself. And it uses the word, later on here, it uses the word generation, which we have to kind of look at and understand what it's talking about here in the particular case. But it does mean, in a sense, to bring something to in order, put something in sequence of time, or put something in sequence of which how you, when you had an army, really have an army, you know, you have to have it well organized. You know, and we have the tabernacle, we talked about that, and the four armies around the tabernacle, and each one was a host, or they were the armies of a particular east, west, north, and south, and God established when it was to, how it was to be set up. So when he had finished this work, basically he has completed it, and it ceased. He continued no longer did his work, but it came to a completion. A book of Romans talks about it when he completed it. So we're talking about what take place. And I says now verse 2, he says, and the seventh day Elohim ended his work which he had made. Now, what, you know, the work, it really means exactly what you think it means. And it's very fascinating that he said this, that he ended his work. What does the commandment tell us to do on about the Sabbath? Okay, thou shalt keep.
6 days you shall work, and on the seventh day
you shall work. You will cease from what?
Work,
very important. The prohibition is on work. But he says for 6 days you shall do all your work on your labor. But on the Shabbat, you will cease from your work. We have to kind of know there is a difference in that terminology of labor. Hebrew terminology. Today, we kind of put that all means the same thing, you know. But actually have a different meaning completely in Hebrew. We're not going to go through that today at all. But it's very fascinating here at verse 2, and he said, you know, the seventh day Elohim ended his work, and he rested on the seventh day from his work which he had made. Now, work again is occupation, some business you did, or some business, occupation that the Creator did, creating the heavens and the earth, and then he quit his work. He just stopped. And that was his occupation, in a sense, to create. To create the heavens and the earth was his occupation. That was his job, might put it in that sense. But it's kind of interesting that he turned around and he decided he was going to rest, or he was going to cease from it. And then and he rested, meaning shovel, means to stop, to cease from working. And it has other meanings too, but basically right here in Genesis. And I want to read a couple things here. You don't have to turn there. And Yahweh smelled a smooth aroma. And Yahweh said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake. Although the imagination of a man's heart is bad from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing that I have done. While earth remains, seed time to harvest time, cold to heat, winter to summer, day and night, shall not, and here's the word, rest, shall not Shabbat. He's going to make sure that he will never do it again. as long as he lives. He's going to guarantee he's no longer going to destroy the earth as he had done in the past. And then, of course, on the Day of Atonement, it's a very interesting word in Hebrew. And it shall be unto you a Shabbaton. That's a very interesting word. Shabbaton means you're going to have this day as though it was like a Sabbath. You can rest as you would rest normally on a Sabbath day. On the Day of Atonement, it's your Shabbaton, and you're going to rest in the very same manner with one major exception. No water and no food. And from evening to evening, for it's a long 24-hour period, which some of you, have experienced it, some of you have not. And so it's just kind of interesting. Okay, in verse 3, and God blessed the seventh day. Now, that word, of course, is barach. Barach. Basically, the word barach in a literal sense means to the knee. Our word that we use every day when we talk about certain creeks, we call them brooks. You know, have you ever had a brook? You ever seen a brook, babbling brook? The reason why it was called a brook in Hebrew, that word means is the knee. And the reason why is if you want to drink water, guess what you had to do? Get down on your knees to get that little water trickling down there. It's not enough cold fish. It's just a little brook, and so we get the word like Brush Creek Road, but it's really Brush Brook Road in a sense because it's just a creek in a lot of ways. It's just a little small little waterway. Oh, except wintertime, sometimes it gets pretty heavy, but that's not very often. And then he said he sanctified it. Now, what does sanctification mean? Speak louder, please. Set apart. Any other?
Made it holy.
Made it holy. Okay. The simplicity of the word comes from meaning to be clean. So the Sabbath, he set it apart and he set that day to be clean. Now we have to ask, what is clean with God? Now, what is it that on the Sabbath day you and I are to do, since it's associated with the root word of to be clean? Where is it that you, how could you associate this day as a day of cleanliness? Now remember, he created already. He stopped his work. His work was wonderful. He loved it. It was ketov. He didn't say that it was unclean, did he? Because God didn't create that anything unclean in the true sense of the word. Now we come to this point. Now he says, took a particular day, the next day, and he decided to do something different with it. He's going to make it, set it apart, as we call that, different than the other 6 days. And he decided to make it, in a sense, clean. It's also been translated to be hallowed, we know that, and also been to be a delight, to be a dedicated thing. So, in your thoughts, what is the Sabbath to you? It's a blessing in what way? To rest from? From labor or work. All right. What do you put in its place? Holiness, cleanliness, sanctificationness. I use those kind of words. But that's what you do with it. It's just not, you don't sit back and relax and do nothing. You're supposed to do something with it. What are you supposed to do with it? How are you going to delight in my Sabbath, he says. How do you do that? Sleep all day long? Go on a fast, not have anything, eat, drink for all the time? Yes.
I think you should be in communion with your Father.
Sorry, what?
I think you should be in communion with your Father.
Okay.
Back when I was logging, we got one day off
We worked about, 7 to 8 months, depending on how soon they run us out of the woods. And we were working 10-hour days. And that one day, I didn't feel like doing much of anything but just rest.
We were instructed to redeem the time.
Redeem
because
time.
Because we wasted a lot of time before we got where we're at.
Take advantage of the time spend the time right.
Redeem it.
We spend 6 days being pulled in 90 directions with the things of the world and the things we have to do. And the Sabbath is a sign that I'm following the Creator. I'm to be like Him and remember Him. So it gives me pause to think about those things.
So why did He create it? Oh, yeah, okay.
It also says to refrain from doing our own will. I have a much easier time not working than refraining from doing my own will. That's the struggle that sometimes gets me.
Okay.
But to clear my mind, I don't have to worry about anything. To be able to just clear my mind completely of worldly things and all the stuff going on around us, and to be able to focus just on God, my relationship with Him, and my constant striving towards better obedience.
To me, he put us aside as a peculiar people, and the Sabbath is supposed to be a sign to identify how that we are set aside from the rest of the world, out of it. Well, what do I want God to see when He sees me as a peculiar person? I want Him to see that I'm noticing Him, that I am trying to be as peculiar as He wants me to be. If I'm trying to be that way, and He pulled me out of the world to be that way, then the Sabbath was pulled out of the rest of the week the same way. So the Sabbath needs to be a peculiar day, a strange day to us, that it does not fit or does not look correctly like the rest of them, just like we are supposed to be a peculiar thing to the rest of the world. It's the same parallel. So just like since he raised up the clean animals to be peculiar from the rest of them, He raised up a peculiar people out of the rest of them to be strange or unique. He, for the Sabbath, to be pulled out of the rest of them to be strange or unique. All of those are to be, essentially, mirror images of each other.
So the first thing He did is pull out a period of time first. Now, fascinating thing about the Sabbath, this doesn't have a message of there was evening and morning were the seventh day. And so when we look at the first chapter, remember we at the very end of it, what was the last thing that God formed? Man. Where was He going to take man? Into His Sabbath. Book of Hebrews calls it His Sabbath. He created in the very, very beginning. But He didn't create it because He was tired, bushed, exhausted, working 10 hours a day, or anything. He did it because He wants mankind to enter from that position of doing your work and enter into my clean time. Enter in with me and be part of me, be part of my world, be part of what I think. And so that's the reason why the Sabbath is called a holy convocation in Leviticus, is because that's what it is. And you go there and you find out exactly what is it that God has in mind. Right? I mean, how often do you think about that on a Sabbath? Well, that's what it's all about. We're coming in contact with the Creator of heaven and earth. He put that aside. He sanctified it. Not for Himself. He doesn't need any time to stop working. Remember what Yahshua said to, I think, the Pharisees? Here do my Father's work, and here do I work on the Sabbath. What? Yeah. God is not finished. He didn't create it for Himself to stop. He created for man to stop. And that's why Yeshua said, it is made for man, Man was not made for the Sabbath. And it had gotten that way in the Jewish world because, see, technically speaking, in their vision or their purpose, the sixth day wasn't the end of his creation. He brought now man into the other part, which he now, like the rest of them, are all subject to mankind, all the way in the last verses in the first chapter. All things are subject now to man that's on this earth. And now man's subject to Sabbath. Because the next day, right? And that's how they come around and came to believe that, well, they had all the rules and regulations. And understandable, they were trying to do their very best. They just didn't do very well. They did some bad things. They did some good things. But nonetheless, they came into the point where Sabbath was bound up being a burden. All the things you cannot do, and then all the things you can do. It had more rules and regulations and laws than were written in a Torah, if I put it that way. So it really became a burden, and that's why an awful lot of people kept keeping the Sabbath, because it was very, very difficult. So it's a time of cleanliness. Time that I not just stop working my work, but a time to sanctify my mind, to sanctify my thoughts, to sanctify my belief systems, to go back and find out, okay, God, I've got to clean up something. I need to find out what it is I need to clean up. Because that's what I have to do. Remember, Sabbath is a completion. It means that something now is finished. That's the end of the story. Right? And so we're now at this point where chapter 2 has another thought coming in. What do you think the thought is? Verse 4 starts out quite differently. What do you think it starts out with? So what does generation mean?
New beginning.
Oh no. It means to bear, to bring forth, also means to beget. It means to travail. Also means to gender or generate. So that's that in Hebrew, that's what the word really means. To bear, to bring forth, and to beget, to gender, and to travel, or to travail. To travail. Really interesting word, isn't it? Your main generation is to travail. Yeah. It's not traveling. Here, Yahweh Elohim. This is the first time the word comes into play. Chapter 1 didn't use the word Elohim. I mean, did not use the word Yahweh or Yahuwah. Now it begins with a different beginning. We're going to talk about this because a lot of people have a controversy over there is a conflict between chapter 1 and compared to chapter 2. It looks like man was not created on the sixth day, male and female, but was created much later down the line, and then the woman was created later on down the line. Remember that? We'll talk about chapter 2, because it looks like there is a contradiction. And if there is, there is. If there isn't, there isn't. But you're going to have to make your own mind up. But you remember, the Bible says that in the beginning, it tells you the conclusion. It tells you where you're going. It tells you what's happening. It tells you how I'm going to run the thing. So it says here, and these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that Yahuwah Elohim made earth, and heaven. Elohim, now the name shows up. And now that name is beginning to be attached to Elohim. It unfolds something entirely different. Starting to unfold about the creation of man. Not about plant life. Not about rain. Not about tilling. Not about anything. Just starts with the creation of man. In a sense, this is the beginning of history. Remember what history means? Story of his, or his story. So now God's going to tell us the story of man. What he's doing with it. What he's going to accomplish with it. What he's going to finish and fulfill his will. Fulfill his desire. Verse 5. And every plant, that means bush, plant, or shrubs, of the field, before it was in the earth, edits, and every herb, that's a herb, herbage, grass, green grass, of the field, before it grew. For Yahweh Elohim did not cause it to rain upon the earth, it's a horrible translation there, and no man to till the ground. So before what? Okay, it's a really touchy word in English. But there went up a mist, we'll talk about the word mist in a minute, from the earth, not from above, and watered the whole face of the ground. We'll talk about the word ground here in a minute. It's not earth in this case, it's ground. Now the word before is a Hebrew word and has several primary different meanings. Basically, it does mean what we think. Something is going to happen, but before that happens, this will take place. It also has a meaning of to interrupt or to suspend. Something was started and it's going to be interrupted. It's going to be held in suspense until something else is to begin or to come about. Basically, it just means before or not yet or all that kind of things. So we're reading here, chapter 2, verse 5, and before there was even plants, but wait a minute, in the first chapter, it was the third day. Okay, got that, okay. And there wasn't any herbs, and he didn't say about anything else. Now, he mentioned just these two things in this chapter. What are the two things that he mentioned? Was it animals, birds, fish? Was it the sun, moon, and star? Was it light? Was it separation of the water? He's only naming one thing. What is he naming? Plant life. Did you notice that? Just plant life. Now we know on the third day, seed bearing within itself. So that was there. But now we have a problem in chapter 2. It appears that chapter 1 isn't telling us the truth. It's lying to us. Right? Now, is this the truth, chapter 2, or is chapter 1 the truth? They're both the truth. So we talk about plant life. Very fascinating about plant life because, see, this is what Genesis starts out with. Doesn't start out with being a farmer. Doesn't start out with being a herdsman. Starts out with being something to do with plant life. Did you notice that? The Garden of Eden, as we'll get there later, wasn't full of wild beasts, wasn't full of creepy, crawly things. It wasn't full of bears, animals, horses, dogs, cats, because it was a place that was designated to do one thing. Adam was to do something with it, right? Take care of the garden. Oh. Now, we're talking about plants here. So before he could bring forth what's called or known as the Garden of Eden, before he could do that, he had to create man first. There's no reason to have plant life for the garden unless somebody's there to do some work. I mean, many of you have probably been out in the field before, garden or something, and you know, you cut down the herb, whatever it is, and that's that was a lot of work, cutting that bushes down. A lot of work, got stuff out, got it all chipped away, it's goodbye. And then a week later, it's back. Go, what, do it again? It's not a one-time job, it's a continually onset job. So now we're talking about now something very, very important, I think, in my personal mind. Verse 7. Now it says, and Yahweh Elohim formed, that means he shaped, he molded something. A man of the dust. Now dust just means dry earth, powder type, like dry earth. No moisture. No water. And he said, of the ground. Now, this is the ground what we would think of, meaning where you plant your garden. It's not Eretz. It's Adam. It's the land. It's the earth. It's the one you actually get that plant life comes up out of. All right? So we go into this thing, and man now is made out of that dry earth. And with now he puts water with it, and it comes mortar, in that sense, a bunch of mud in the clay. So he found now, all he's doing is forming the man. And now the next thing he does is he did something. He breathed into his nostrils something. He breathed into him life. All right? That's a little bit different. And the next statement's very unusual. When he breathed life into the man, then something transpired. Man became something. What did he become?
A living soul.
Okay. What's the word for life? Chai. Nefesh chai is what in Hebrew it says. He breathed chai and then nefesh chai. Breath lived. Fascinating phrase. Yes.
I don't know if you can attempt to explain the distinction between the breath or life is in the breath versus life being in the blood, as he talks about the animals.
Right.
Can you try to see if you can explain a little bit of that and the details between the differences as to why God makes the distinction of how can life be in breath versus be in
right.
blood and blah, blah, blah.
Life that breathes is just that. This was a little different, and I just got to think about it. God brought... He could have created man the same as he created a dog or a cat or a bear. And let air go into them and got breathe, they got lungs, they could breathe. Because air is what we breathe in, right? We breathe in, I breathe in, I breathe out, you breathe out. We breathe air in and breathe out. This particular one is different. He did not breathe life into a dog. He did not breathe life into a serpent. He did not breathe life into a whale. But why would he do this for man?
Relationship.
Why did he create man? Sorry, what?
Have fellowship with.
Okay. So God's in need of having fellowship. That doesn't sound right. Sorry, what? He made them in His image. Nothing else was made in His image. And why is He making or formed man from out of the dust, Adam, and breathed into him life? Why did He do that for? Still forming. He is still forming His image in man. He's still, and this is the forming of His image in man, including His very life. God's very life within man. Yes?
Along those lines, which is kind of what I was alluding to earlier, with regards to the life in the blood versus life in the breath, is that, yeah, he set aside human beings unique because we are like Him. We can create. We can build things. No animal or species that He ever created could do all that. So He was able to build all the rest of them, and He didn't have to breathe a part of Him into them.
And didn't have to.
Because it wasn't
His plan.
Yeah, they're a self-contained living thing.
Right.
But His life isn't in them, per se, as opposed to
so
ours.
No, nobody returning else of life to those the breathing things that didn't have His life brought into them.
Right, they're
no return to
them.
Not,
right, they're not a creatable, or they themselves do not reflect Him. They do not have the spirit or the awareness that He put inside of man. They're distinctly different.
And so when we get into farther into later on in this chapter, I think, I'm not quite sure, maybe it's the next one, but anyway, there are certain statements that Elohim made, or Yahuwah made, which kind of aims right back to where we're at right here in Genesis chapter 2, in this particular area, where He says, I breathe life. Then what took place? Nefesh Chai. Now, that life that He breathed in man became living. Not like a dog or a cat, but living in the realm and the image and the likeness of the very Creator Himself. That's how awesome this whole picture is all about. It's very fascinating to realize and look back and say, man, it's a breath of spirit. It's the breath of His spirit, in a sense. One day they'll talk about the book of Romans, but they'll be a long way down the future. And Apostle Paul uses certain phrases that just nail it right down to the core of what we're talking about right here. But that's another subject matter later on. And it's something different where there is different spirit in man and life. Nefesh. It's like breath began to live. You understand what I'm saying? It's like it's always breath, but one breath, this one, is going to be a living breath, a breath that lives for as long as God wants it to live. You understand so far what I'm saying? Or have I lost people? Yes.
On the same lines where Yeshua said, my words are spirit and life.
Yeah. Along that line. There's a book of Hebrews that talks about a certain sword. Do you remember what that sword's capable of doing? Separating something from the bone from the, all right, and it separates soul from spirit. That's how powerful that sword is. It's going to separate nephesh
and hai.
Yeah. It's going to separate it. Remember, flesh and blood cannot enter the kingdom of God. We know that. So what's going to enter in there? Why do we breathe? Because our body is created in a way that if we didn't have air into our body, the blood dies, right? It cannot do its job. Life ceases. That's why life is in the blood of an animal. Also, now in man, there's another life. And that's a life that the Spirit of God is giving us. Now, can it be dormant or not be used? Sure. Can we ignore it? Sure. But how many people do you know that doesn't have a mind? That they can't think? I mean, there may be some handicaps and certain cases of illnesses and all that, but that's not what I'm talking about. Mankind as a whole was for due to one thing. What was mankind in whole to do? Yeah. To be like his creator. That's what we're created to be, like him. When I created to be like a dog, when I created to be like a plant, when I created to be like a stone, when I even created to be like to eat. He didn't create us for that we would have a wonderful life. He created us to be like him. Do you understand what I'm saying? God has not told us where he's taking us. He told us the reason why I created you, the reason why I formed you, the reason why I established you, the reason why I'm teaching you, the reason why I'm guiding you, directing you, and having you hear everything I have said is because I want you to be just like me. No flesh. Life. Life comes from life. Now, ask yourself a question. Does the creator of heaven and earth breathe in air and exhale air in order for him to survive? No. He doesn't. How does he live then without air, nephesh? How does he live without nephesh? How does he live, quote, without a soul? Wow. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is why he created us. In the very beginning, he says, this is the reason why I'm doing this. I told you in the very beginning what I'm doing. I told you the very beginning how I'm going to form you. I told you the very beginning what the goal is all about. I told you the very beginning I'm here to do my will, to be pleasing for me. And it's, what is his will? What's he pleasing? Oh, he likes storms. He likes earthquakes. He likes hellfire and brimstone. No. Actually, I think he likes himself. And he created people to be just like him. When we reach that realm, somewhere in that realm, when we are dead and buried in a grave, something should happen to us. When he decides to do so, he will then therefore call forth not nephesh. He's going to call for your name. And life will arise from the grave. Nephesh is over with. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not too hard to figure out, is it? Right now, we are breathing, and that breathing has life within it. When God removes the breathing, we think there is no more life. And therefore we see the dead. And the dead have no more life. And we hear what the Apostle Paul says, and the Messiah himself says, they're asleep. That's why they have this image, the book of Revelation. He's on the throne and there's a bunch of souls under there. They've not yet been completed. The soul's got to be a little bit moved and then life will come. He's telling us, look, it's not time yet. Wait until your fellow man, your fellow servants go through what you have gone through. Now we look back at our life. I brought out in chapter 1 how the first shall be last, the last shall be first, which means the priority, primary number one reason why light was there was because the end of the sixth day, man was created. The light was brought forth for man. Do you understand what I'm saying? All, he said, that has ever been created on this earth is now under the jurisdiction and authority of man. Doesn't belong to God. He says, no, sure, no. So much so that man got to choose what to call it. Man got to choose what to name it. Man got to choose and say, I want to call this and that. And then it became that because he didn't want to call it a this. The this didn't work, but the that worked, but the this didn't work. But the this over here worked. So we got a this and we got a that. But they can't be the same. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting confused here, but you know what I'm saying? And so we look at our life as God says, how, when we get there, that's just very important. I can't get to that right away today. But when you see the actions, when you see Elohim saying certain things to Adam, those certain things, those certain statements, those certain phrases is, to my mind, awesome. Because what is man that you are so mindful of him? Oh, the reason why I'm so mindful of him, because I made him for a reason. He's really a big number one person in my world. Well, you think the earth is more number one? No. The heaven and earth will pass away, right? Says in Revelations. And a new heaven, a new earth comes. So this earth is not really his priority. His priority is mankind. That's why he said, this is point number two, in the beginning, I told you the end. Do you understand? Now, as we get into the Garden of Eden next week, we're going to go back here about before there was plants and before there was herbs, God created man. Now we're hearing a different purpose, a different reason, a different scenario. And if we just stick here on the earth all day long, we'll never figure out what he was referring and what he was saying. God did not create the Garden of Eden in vain. He didn't create it in stupidity. He created it for a reason. And that reason is for mankind. And we'll get there when the time comes. Any questions? This is a kind of short one. Give Daniel a lot more time. Yes.
I don't confuse myself. I just want to clarify. Did you say something about the herbs and the plants being here, or the man being here before them? I don't.
Chapter 1. You remember chapter 1? What did he say? On the third day, plant life emerged with seeds in it, seed-bearing plant life. And man didn't come on the scene until the sixth day. Now in chapter 2 it said, now before there was plant life, or before, technically speaking, we get to this point, we'll talk about it later, but before God put the Garden of Eden, he didn't give plant life, there was no plant life in the Garden of Eden. We'll get to that point. Because the word is ground, not eretz. In chapter 1, it's eretz. In chapter 2, it's not eretz, it's Adam. which is shall not. Now I'm going to take something, and now I'm going to have a different form to do a job. Earth, that means the world, the globe. Remember, it's covered with water. Then the water separated, and up came the land. The land got plant life on it. And then in the sun, the moon, the stars were then brought into being. And then life was given, was in the water. Life was given in the air, birds and fish. And along comes the sixth day, which all animal life got created. And then God created man.
Okay.
And he gave full authority over.
I want to ask a question. I understand what you're saying. In chapter 1, the plants were produced, and then God makes man on the sixth day. But then down in chapter 2, before the plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown, for the Lord God had caused it, had not caused it to rain, and there was no man to till the ground, but a mist went up, and then God forms man. Now, those two sound contradictory, but what I'm asking, is that the same as now but not yet?
Now, not yet.
Now, but it's now, but it's not yet?
That is not yet.
Okay, so he's counting as...
What was not yet? That what was not yet? The Garden of Eden was not yet.
Okay, but he doesn't say over here Garden of Eden. He says...
No, but in the chapter it will. Because now he's bringing in now Adam, created him, to do a job, and he placed him in a place that had now plant life.
Okay, now, are you saying that he, in chapter 1, in verse 10, or verse 11, he made plant life in other places, but had not yet made it in the Garden of Eden? Or are you... Okay, answer that. Is that what you're saying?
Right, because he said something very special about the Garden of Eden. It's east of Eden.
So he didn't put plants all over the earth?
What does the word Eden mean? Daniel told you this. Wasteland. Nothing's growing there. The ground is barren.
So that's what you're saying, that if these plants existed other places, but not
in the
where
garden. He was going to place man to be in. This is what the subject matter in chapter 2 is all about. This is where I'm taking you, and he's telling us exactly how he formed man. Now I'm going to do this to you, and now I'm going to take you before I am bringing forth plant life. I am in this area where I'm created, because he created a dusty area. The area was dust, no moisture. The moisture came up out of the earth. It didn't come down from above. Well, he made mud pie. Okay. Anyway, so as we get into the next chapter, a next continuation of the verse, we'll see that God actually had in mind from the very beginning something we have a hard time picturing, because there are so many people who contradict. Well, see, chapter 1 is lying, or chapter 2 is lying, because of plant life. Poppycock is not talking about the globe. Let's talk about a place where it's called Adam, where it's dusty, no moisture. But in Revelation, in the first chapter, it says, and God separated the water from the land, right? So there was water, but he didn't use that water. He didn't use that water at all. He had life in that water, yeah. Had life in the air, yeah. But he didn't use that. He used something that came up out of the earth. A dew that came up out of the earth. We think dew comes down because we live in a world that has to come downward. This one didn't come down. It went up. Came up from the ground. Yes?
Eastward in Eden or of Eden?
We'll get to there when we talk about Eden. That'll be next week.
Oh.
Okay. That's why I stopped it here in this particular area, because one of the reasons why I want to stop at this location is I wanted to have you come realize and come to knowing there is a difference between life or air and life, and that God is going to separate those two. We went on to farther subject matter here, which I want to kind of lean it up to next week, of explaining why he said why it's called ground, why it's called Adam, and why it was dusty, why it was dry, no moisture. Very strange word, because in the first chapter, there was water. Right? Here, there is no water. And no rain came down. Moisture. It means that, in Hebrew, it means that dampness, the dew. It doesn't mean a lot of water. It doesn't mean a river came. It doesn't mean a flood came. It just means a little bit of water came. And some of you have ever made clay, made things out of clay. Well, one thing you have to have is water to make the clay work, right? Otherwise, you got a bunch of dusty stuff. All your powder is all powder, and it's not going to form. It's going to still be all... So you add a little water to it, now you can form it and make it. And that's what God is talking about here. And a very pottery type, like, says, I am the potter, you are the clay, type of picture here.